Welcome to the Small Business Big Impact podcast, where we speak to people and planet positive small and medium businesses and startups about how they're creating an outsized impact and how other small businesses can too. In this interview, we are talking to Nick Sheridan about ideals worth spreading and attracting a loyal following through values-led business. Nick founded 99th Monkey in 2013 with the aim of creating food that not only tastes delicious, but is good for your health and kind to our planet and the workers in the supply chain. Living in London and training for his first and apparently maybe last marathon in 2012, he became obsessed with peanut butter and on returning to Melbourne decided to turn his obsession into a business. With a background as a journalist, including at The Age, The Sun, and The Global Coffee Report, Nick faced a steep learning curve as he bootstrapped his business from the farmers markets to national distribution with Coles supermarkets. Nick is responsible for driving the strategy and growth of 99th Monkey while also remaining involved in the day-to-day operations of the business. So welcome to the Small Business Big Impact interview series, Nick.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So as an American, I totally understand the peanut butter obsession because we love it. But what inspired you to specifically focus on creating a more sustainable, ethical nut butter?
Yeah, for me, it was, I guess the two things came together almost separately. The initial idea was, okay, I want to start a business. What can I do? I had some nut butter recipes and I was a bit of an obsession with nut butter that was getting a bit out of control. So decided that would be the way to go about starting a business. And then when I decided, once I decided that it was what, then I started to think about what kind of business do I want to run? And for me, it was just a bit of a no-brainer. It had to be a business that was in line with the values that I hold dear. And so things, you know, things like the environment and ethical treatment of people were just, you know, I wouldn't want to be involved in, let alone running a business that didn't put those things first, really. So that's how it came about. Yeah.
And had you seen the way other businesses were running, like including other nut businesses or other similar food businesses, that kind of made you realize that you wanted to do it differently?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, it's almost an age ago now. It's 2013. Things have advanced a lot since then. But back then there was a handful of brands that were really notable for what they were doing. I think Loving Earth was a great example, still is a great example of a strongly values-led business. Green and Blacks, Cocoa out of the UK, and I guess, you know, looking towards the UK, the fair trade movement, that, you know, I'd been living in the UK for a few years, and the fair trade certification, you know, I've got to be honest, I probably didn't really know exactly what it meant, but I knew it meant doing things in a better way, you know. So I didn't know all the technicalities of creating co-ops and all the stuff that I've learned since, but I knew it did mean paying producers a better rate and a better way of trading. So I guess I looked at all of those things and could see that it was possible, and that's the way there were some businesses doing that. And for me, yeah, as I said, if I was going to start a business, I just wouldn't have been comfortable or as passionate about it if we weren't making an effort to do those things.
Absolutely. And so you got into the business, but did all of that go quite as planned? I mean, as you mentioned, 2013 was a long time ago. You've been at this for a while. So tell me a bit more about the early journey and the lessons that you learned that set you on the path that you're on now.
Oh, God. I joke that the only difference between me and someone with an idea that goes nowhere is that I'm stupid enough to follow through and stubborn enough to continue on even after I've failed a million times, which isn't, probably isn't, you know, that's not actually a pattern in my life. For some reason, I'm really stuck with this one. But yeah, look, the learning curve is huge. Starting a business, I can literally remember like numerous instances in the between the moment I decided to start the business and before I'd even made my first batch, moments where I'd came up against stuff like, you know, registering a food business and you can only use a commercial kitchen to produce and stuff that I had no idea about. You need public liability insurance, and every time I encountered one of these steps, in my head there'd be a little voice going, all right, it's over now, give up, this is too hard, what are you thinking, yeah, how on earth are you going to make this work? But I made a conscious decision very early on that the only way for this to work was for me to be stupidly kind of determined and not give any kind of give too much credence to all of those challenges and just go otherwise it just never would have happened. And I think I was at a stage in my life, I was, you know, early 30s by then, where I could see that, you know, I'd had a number of ideas in the past that I hadn't gone anywhere because you get derailed by those things, and that, you know, I knew what that led to, which was nothing, you know. And so it was time to push, continue pushing, and that continues today. You know, we're always facing new challenges, so it's a very steep learning curve and you just have to be prepared. I joke with my friends that one of my metrics for achievement nowadays is the time taken to bounce back from a soul-crushing defeat, whereas in the early days that could take weeks. I'd mope around for weeks, something terrible would happen and I'd be thrown off course. Nowadays I've got it down to like a matter of minutes. I can face something which I just think, how on earth are we going to get over this, and then take a minute and then just, all right, let's get back into it. So you know, I don't think there's any one specific thing. There's just so many things that are always happening. Some of them are tiny and some of them are huge, and they all feel the same when you encounter them. But
you mean they all feel huge?
Yeah, that's right. There's no differentiation in the emotional response at the time. It's like but it's just about finding a way past it and you know, over time starting to believe that, okay, we can overcome these things. These aren't existential problems, even though they feel like it.
It really sounds like an argument for starting a business that you're passionate about, you know, like some sort of entrepreneurship gurus really advocate that, not all. Sometimes being too passionate about your business can be a downfall, but you know, that's the thing about starting a values aligned business or something where you have real purpose, is that you have the motivation to stick with it for the years that it takes to get a new business up off the ground.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I think you've got to feel, you've got to, yeah, really believe in it. And I think that's, for me, that's the difference between this and probably everything else I've ever done before. You know, I always had trouble past that first year or two in a job. It's like, what am I doing here? Why? What's the point of this job? Whereas for this one, and you know, it's multi-layered for me. Like sometimes it's just as simple as we make great nut butter. Like, and I really, I enjoy that simplicity as much as all of the kind of the more high level ambitious stuff. Is like, at the end of the day, if all else is taken away from it, these little jars of nut butter that we send out are delicious and they're awesome. So, you know, even if we can't achieve our loftier goals, I still feel good about the fact that we're creating a great product and giving people a good experience with that. And then obviously want to build on that and create something much more. But, you know, like I know, I relate that back to my days as a journalist, where there'd be days where you write five stories and just think, what, not as, there wasn't one of those that meant anything to me, you know. Yeah, it was,
what
just
did that add to the world?
Yeah, it was just generating content to fill people's days, and there were some stories that were fantastic, obviously, and those were what you live for. But for me now, I feel like that foundation is there regardless. You know, it's a good, simple product. And I love the fact that, you know, my kids know what I do. You know, when I go pick my daughter up from kinder, she tells her friends, like, my dad's got a monkey on his t-shirt because he makes peanut butter. she thinks it's like a rational connection.
Yeah,
that's right, which is really cute. But, you know, like, yeah, I do, I'm satisfied by just the simplicity of it in a lot of ways, and then obviously having the bigger ideas as well.
And it helps having raving fans as well.
You know, yeah,
the tribe that surrounds 99th Monkey.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, sorry, go on.
And so talk me through also sort of the pain that was involved in getting the right ingredients. Like, the sourcing nuts can be fraught for so many reasons, both environmentally and socially. So can you talk to us a bit about, yeah, how you handled that from the early days, even up until now?
Yeah, it's been really challenging. And, you know, I've got to preface that by saying it's not perfect. You know, there's still problems with some of the details about just the whole food system that we live in. Really, monocultural food production is problematic environmentally. It doesn't matter whether it's almonds, which you know, have well-known problems around water usage, or, you know, or soybeans, or, you know, they're all problematic, unfortunately. The system that we've created is problematic. You know, I guess it comes down to that, looking at it as a systemic thing rather than focusing on individuals. So I totally acknowledge that, and I'm not big enough, unfortunately, to change that. I hope to play a role in pushing it in the right direction. You know, I do talk to my suppliers about what they're doing, and you know, I know my almond supplier runs sustainability programs that their customers can contribute to as well, and so we're in talks about how we can you know, as we grow, become involved in those things, and, you know, to try and, you know, while recognizing that we're operating in an imperfect system, try and do things that improve that system, I guess. But, you know, I guess the very real world example of, you know, the challenges there, like when I started very idealistic and simplistic, and thought, okay, well, I'm going to create an organic Australian nut butter, and that's what I'm going to do, and it's going to be, you know, so I'm just going to hop on the internet and I'm going to find all the ingredients I want, and they're all going to be organic and all going to be Australian, and that'll be as simple as that. And then, so I started looking on the internet, it's like, and I was making, one of my first products was a chocolate peanut butter. So, okay, well, how do I get cacao, for organic Australian cacao? There's one producer in Australia and they don't sell it to anyone because they use it for their own chocolate. So, well, that's impossible. Okay, well, what about organic Australian sugar? I couldn't find it. And it was just like, oh, okay. So these things you don't just magically say, that's what I want to do, therefore there they are. Like, there are actual limitations in the supply chain on what people produce and where, like that. And literally, so there's one organic peanut farm in the whole country, but, you know, even then, I didn't see the problem in that at the time, because I had no idea about supply and continuity of supply and think, you know, what that meant. So I thought, oh, well, I found the one organic peanut farm in Australia. I'll just buy from them. And in my, you know, very kind of self-righteous, simplistic way, was like, well, and why doesn't everyone else just buy from them? You know, sure enough, I bought 25 kilograms of peanuts from them, which I thought was a mountain of peanuts at the time. Got through that in a few weeks and called them up and said, can I get more? And they said, well, we've got about 100 kilos left, and then we won't have any more until October. And I think this was February or March. I was like, what do you mean? They're like, well, it's an annual crop and we're the only producer in Australia, so we sell out really quickly. And that's the way it goes. It's like, oh, really? Okay. So then I had to go back and say, what am I doing? We're like, what is this business actually? You know, am I making it just to make organic Australian products? Am I making it, you know? And it's taken me years to figure that out, to be honest. And I've had to be very flexible. And there's been times, you know, when that happened, it's like, well, does this business exist? You know, can this business exist? What are we doing? And you know, I think I've learned over time that you have to be, you do have to be flexible. Unfortunately, you know, we live in an imperfect world. You can't be completely rigid about what you're going to do. But what you can do, and what I've tried to do all along, is try to make the best decisions we can along the way, and be aware of where the imperfections lie, and be conscious of those and not hide from them, is a big thing for me. And always be open to, like, either actively looking for ways to improve that, or open to ways when they come along to go, all right, well, this is a better way to do it. I think that's the best we can do. You know, we can't just snap our fingers and create a perfect world. We've got to just work at it.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's really about just being very aligned with your purposes, your values, being very clear on what your values are, as opposed to having a very rigid commitment.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, so whereas I think for the first few years I was always very, you know, and you read a lot of business books and they're like, you know, you've got to know your vision and your mission and your values and your purpose and all the different kind of terminology that different people will use for those things. And I was always trying to come up with very specific kind of, well, this is what we do and this is what we don't do, and you know, and then you'd grow a bit, or there'd be a drought in Queensland for 2 years, or something would happen. It's like, oh, well, I can't stick to that. Like, if I stick to this very rigidly defined parameters, then I just have to shut the business, actually. So I think you've got to be a bit flexible about that, but you've got to hold true to those really underlying things. And, you know, for us, it's come back to, which is a phrase that's been with us from the beginning, and it's not an original phrase, it's used by others as well, so I can't take credit for it, but that whole idea of making food that's delicious and good for your health and good for the planet, you know, that in the end, that's been there from the beginning, and that's the one that stays with us over time. And it's finding new ways to make that more true over time as well. You know, it's you can't, you know, like, as I said, I totally acknowledge there is a problem with almond production globally, and 80% of our products are almond based. So we're a part of that problem. But I don't think us not making almond butter is going to solve that problem, unfortunately. Hopefully us getting much bigger in this space and having that, you know, that intent and that conversation with our suppliers will help push it in the right direction. And there is a lot of technology, being developed to try and make crops more water efficient. So, you know, hopefully that's a way around it. But, you know, so what else do we do? Well, for me, a big one was, what can we do right now? We can become carbon neutral. You know, we can do that. That's, I'll say easy. It's not actually easy, but it's doable, you know, and it's like, from a business sense, it makes no sense whatsoever. But, you know, when I made that decision, you know, we'd just been through the last federal election. Climate change looked like it was dead as an issue in Australia for at least the next few years. Then, you know, half the country was on fire throughout the whole summer. And, you know, I was just like, oh my God, we really, I need to do something. We all need to do something, even though I think really proper solutions for this stuff are only really going to come from government level ultimately. But, you know, if that's not there, then what do? You can't just not do anything. So I think, yeah, that's, yeah, sorry, I ramble.
No, it's all part of, as you said, continuing to make decisions that get you closer to that goal, even when logistically it's not always feasible when you're still starting up. So you get to continue to improve toward that. And I also find it, you know, a good reminder for me, for anyone who does achieve certification, that requires such congratulations, not just on having ticked all the boxes, but on the many, many years that actually takes to get to that point of having a stable enough approach in your business, where you're not having to shift the way you're doing it every couple of months, and being at a point in the business where everyone is on board enough to go through the full process, to engage an auditor, to make sure that everything's in line. You know, that is actually a really huge achievement.
Yeah, that's right. And that's one of the things that is so great about, that I love about this business. And we're a very small team. We're probably less than 10 people still here, and that's production as well as running the business. And, you know, like our operations manager, who's been with us for the longest out of everyone, and started, you know, just filling jars alongside me when pretty much the, you know, running the business was him and myself just filling jars and sending them out. And I asked him when we started getting new people in, started getting too busy, I asked him to write some stuff about how we train new people. And the most detailed stuff that he wrote was about our efforts to our efforts to be sustainable. And it was little things like, you know, I make about 4 trips a week to local supermarkets to red cycle with like boots full of plastic. I think the supermarket, all the local, I try and kind of randomize my visits,
spread it out,
so they don't, but I think they all see me coming. You know, things like that. Brian's our ops manager, and I, we have a special passion for like spotting a good reusable pallet and fixing a pallet, you know, little thing. And he wrote all of that into the training manual, and it was just really obvious. We'd never really discussed it, but really when I got a chance to look at it, it was like, this is really important to him, and this is actually a really important part of just who we are as a business. Like, you know, I don't know, we're not going to change the world with, you know, the bootloads of soft plastics that we recycle, even though it seems like a lot to us. It's not, you know, on a global scale, it's not huge, but it's meaningful, and it's part of, I guess it's part of the culture of the business as well, that we do care, and we behave, that influences the way we behave, you know.
Absolutely. Now, I'd love to take this question from the audience, from Claire, since we're still talking about the early stages. How important was it for you to talk to other people about your idea in the early stages of the business?
Good question, Claire. It's, I think it's, I'm going to sit on the fence a little bit. I'm going to be a bit equivocal in my answer. I think it is very important, but for me, it was also being conscious. Like a lot of people just looked at me like I was crazy, you know. And I had a reasonably promising trajectory in, you know, I'd gone through uni and gotten a job at the age, and you know. So most of my friends were like, Mick, what are you doing? Like, why would you want to start making peanut butter? So I was conscious of that, and so I did shut out a lot of that as well. So I think at risk of I'm afraid this could be bad advice, but you know, you kind of self-select a little bit and let your confirmation bias run wild in those early stages, because there's always going to be reasons why not to do it, and some people will tell you, and a lot of people won't, but you'll be able to see it in their eyes that they just think you're crazy. But if you really believe in the idea, then the only way to know is to do it. And then if you can find those people who believe or have some relevant experience, then they're invaluable. That's, you know, those people are gold, and hang on every word. And, you know, I still, you know, get so much joy out of and just so much strength out of talking to other people in business at all different stages, you know. Like people, I was really lucky I'm very lucky to have an ongoing kind of conversation with someone who's got like a 100 million plus a year food business, who's really, really great, and gives me amazing advice in very small chunks because she's incredibly busy, but that's great. But also just calling up my mates who are running businesses same size as me or even smaller, and just having a chat about this and that, that I think is super important.
Yeah. And were you part of any sort of business networks that you were able to draw on as well?
Yeah. So I have been over time. One of probably the most important one was not a formal network, but the Chobani Food Incubator that they ran in 2018 with five small businesses, us included in that. And I'm still very close with a couple of the other or a handful of the other founders from there, and we talk regularly and about everything that's going on and the challenges and the opportunities, and we're always swapping tips and things like that. So that's fantastic. I also joined the Entrepreneurs Organization. They run an accelerator program for businesses on their way to the kind of 1.5 mil and up, and then they've got their EO actual group for those businesses above that threshold, and that's been fantastic as well. I actually took a break from it this year because I was just so busy implementing stuff that but you know, I had lunch with my old group just a week ago, and I'm still on WhatsApp groups with a lot of them. So I think those are hugely important, particularly in the early days. I think, you know, and I was having this with one of my EO buddies who I had lunch with the other day. We both agreed that actually the most valuable part of that was getting into the room with half a dozen other people who you look at them and you go, oh my God, your business is amazing. You're such a superstar. My God, I can't believe I'm even here. I don't even want to tell you what I'm going through because I look like such an idiot. And then you go around the room and everyone's got the same problems, mm-hmm. and and everyone's worried that they are an imposter and that they don't belong there and they don't know what they're doing. And it's, and the problems, yeah, are all these, when we're thinking about it ourselves, we're thinking, oh my God, I can't believe I can't figure this out myself. Like it must be because I don't know what I'm doing. And then everyone else is the same. And that's the best part. You know, it's not even the solution sometimes. It's just walking out of the room going, oh, so glad that I'm not alone.
And that other people can be successful from the same place that I am right now, feeling like there's no way it's ever going to happen.
That's right. And none of us in business, like, no one knows what they're doing. We're all making it up as we go along. So that's very reassuring and it helps with the whole imposter syndrome thing, which is
right. Well, and now you're that person that other people are looking up. You've achieved the dream of getting onto the shelves at Coles, right? So
yeah.
How did that happen? What about the product do you think that Coles really saw potential in?
Yeah, I think we were really lucky. Great timing. It's so funny because you look back on it now and you think, I guess if I was going to spot an opportunity and pursue it in a growing market, then nut butter would have been a good one to spot. But at the time, that wasn't my thinking at all. It was just, I know how to make nut butter and I want to, start a business. But I guess, we see it everywhere now that there's a growing awareness among consumers around health, particularly. It has been probably the longest standing trend there, but then over the past few years that has evolved into a preference for plant-based proteins particularly, or plant-based foods, proteins particularly, and which has been kind of pushed along by certain diets, I was going to say pushed along by the keto diet, although that's very meat heavy, but it's pushed people to want to eat more protein, and then there's the plant-based thing that comes in as well. So there's a confluence of trends that are kind of changing the way we eat, I think. And I think that's really going to happen over the next 10 years, or I don't know how long it really takes to change a whole population's eating habits, probably decades, I imagine. Or generations, realistically. But it's happening. It is happening. So we were well positioned that those consumer attitudes were my brand was in line with the consumer attitudes. And I was thinking about this. I think maybe for me as a person, I'm probably well placed because I'm probably just like half a step ahead in my desire for the trends of maybe half a step ahead of the mainstream or maybe just on the cusp of where the mainstream exists. So I'm not like way out there in front. I wouldn't lay claim to being that person. So I'm not kind of chasing the wild new horizons, but I do feel like if there's something that is being presenting itself as very important to me, then often that aligns pretty well with what that movement's going to come through over the next couple of years. And so I think that was just how it happened. This, as I said, the 99th Monkey was an embodiment of the values that I held dear, and luckily they were aligned with where the rest of the population was going. And Coles and Woolworths, Coles in my experience, have seen that change, and they know what's going on better than I do, probably. They saw that change coming and they knew that they had to be a part of it. And I think probably in the last decade, they probably lost a bit of ground to independent retailers and organic, health and organic retailers. And they realised they had to change their product mix and what they offered, and they needed to give people more natural options and more small brands and things like that. And so we were well placed for that, in this particular category. And I think those opportunities exist pretty much in every category now, across the board, and which is kind of what we're trying to do now, is to grow beyond being just a nut butter brand, and because we do honestly believe that those opportunities exist everywhere now.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I'm conscious of time, but I really want to talk about the fact that you've recently gone carbon neutral. And I love that you've posted the full life cycle assessment on the website of your entire carbon footprint, so people can actually get that transparency to dig into it a little bit. So, and obviously great for a sustainability geek like me. Yeah. So why was that important to you specifically, and what was the process like?
Yeah. So as I said, like, I think the real trigger for me, I'm very much respond to emotional triggers in those things, but it was the last election. I found that so depressing when that all washed up, and I just thought, hey, what are we doing here? Like, we need to do something about the environment, like 20 years ago, and we're punting it down the road again because of tax breaks for pensioners, basically. But I just thought, what are we doing? And part of me actually, I got a bit depressed about it. And I was like, maybe I just, maybe there's no point. Maybe we just all give up. Maybe my ambition should be to drive a Mustang and have air conditioners in every room and get a jet ski or something and go jet skiing over coral reefs. Yeah, maybe it's all over.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, what's the point in caring? Why am I carrying my reusable cup and doing all of this stuff when we seem like we're on this inevitable trajectory anyway? So I was a little bit bummed about it, but then I kind of just thought, that's ridiculous. And being a parent, I guess, was instrumental there. And it's like, even if all of our efforts are pointless, I still got to look my children in the eye and hopefully grandchildren in the eye and say, I know, I'm sorry, and I tried. Mm. And what can we do to try? And to me, it was like, well, if the government's not going to do anything, I would happily pay, a carbon tax or whatever. I would pay more for along our supply chain if that's what, was needed as an economy-wide response to climate change. But that's not happening. So what do I do? I've got to do it myself. How did I do it? I contacted an auditor out of the blue and said, hey, I've got this tiny little business. It was about half the size of what we are now. And I really want to go carbon neutral. I don't know how we do it, whatever. Can you help me? And he got back to me and said, look, mate, I can't remember. It's like $500 an hour or something like that. Or he said, it's not really practical for you to get me to do it, or really anyone in my industry to do a proper audit of your business, because it'll probably cost you like 10 grand to get the audit and in order to learn that you need to offset $1,000 worth of emissions. But he said, but I like your style. And I like the fact that you want to try, so I'll just do it for you anyway, which was lovely. I'd already pointed out to him who I wanted him to use to do the offset, which is a group who I still work with, although they've reached their capacity at the moment, but with one seed who run tree planting programs in East Timor. And he said, oh, look, if you offset my, the average Australian generates 18.4 tonne of CO2 a year, which was one of the products that these guys sell, was, offset your annual thing in one hit. He said, yeah. if you do that for me, then I'll do your life cycle thing. So that was awesome. And we're still doing that today. I won't give his name because I don't think he can do that for everyone.
Right.
But and then we just went through it. We just stepped through it. Here's our power usage. Here's all the products we buy, where they all come from, where they're all shipped to, down to the details about here's the number of staff we've got, the days they come in, how far they travel. You know, let's do it all. Let's just do the whole thing. And you know, where there was any uncertainty or as a general rule, he would just round it up. You know, so he said generally he's to be safe. You know, he was just assuming kind of 20 to 30% higher than the lower, you know, than the conservative estimates. So we could just be comfortable that, you know, whatever we were doing, it was better than the bare minimum, at least. And so we do that once a year. And then I offset those. Initially, I was doing it just through the Tim Rees program, but they've sold out. So using another group, although I've still, you know, it's challenging to find ones who have good, really good record keeping, which the auditor's educating me about as well. So I'm still looking for a better one with that, who keeps a detailed registry. But at the same time, like I, you know, this year I used one who I think, you know, I've had good communications with. Their record keeping isn't gold standard. I should use that term qualified because there is a gold standard certification, which they are gold standard certified, but their record keeping left a bit to be desired. But it was like, well, I don't know where else to go right now, so I'm just going to offset through them this year and then I'll go look again. And this is a bit, I guess, comes back to my thing about, you know, don't let perfect get in the way of doing something good. And I just want to get it. I just want to make sure we're doing something. And then after that, we actually decided that we'd go a bit further. And at the end of each quarter, I calculate the volume of nut butter we sell. So it's normally, you know, it's kind of between 10 and 20 tons of nut butter every 3 months. And then I just offset that as well. And that's, you know, so we can know that we're offsetting significantly more than we produced. And now I know, you know, I know that there's a whole lot more that we can do in terms of, you know, getting our own sources of renewable energy and things like that for the factory and stuff, but we don't have the resources for that at this point. But, you know, we'll continue to look for ways to improve.
And so you are, by doing that, able to say on the website that you are carbon neutral. Are you looking at also going through certification like Climate Active?
Well, so the advice that I got from the auditor that, yeah, was that it was not really practical at this point because of the cost was prohibitive from what he said. Yeah, like, you know, the cost of our cost of offsetting our business activities for the year is between $1,000 and $2,000. So it's, you know, and this is what kind of frustrates me when a big company says, oh, we're going to be carbon neutral by, you know, 5 years in the future. I'm like, come on, guys, like, just start now. God's sake, just do it. And you know, this is, you know, once again, don't let perfection get in the way of doing a good thing right now. But so I haven't seen, I would like to get a certification that works. I haven't seen one that that has would work for us, but that said, I don't know a huge amount about the space. So like, if you've got one to recommend, or if anyone else who's listening does have one to recommend, please let me know, you know, because I'd like to, we're still learning, we're still trying.
And it's really, to me, pointing out that there's a huge gap for small businesses in that big space time. Like that either existing certifications need to address that for small businesses to make it more accessible, or perhaps a new eco label needs to come into that space.
I think so, and I you know, there's a real challenge there. And I think that challenge is that striking the right balance between allowing people to do something that's not 100% verified every step of the way, because small businesses don't have the resources to do that, and there's really no one out there who would want to do that for a small business. You know, it's not viable. And then there's the danger of greenwashing and people abusing that. So that's problematic. And I think it just sucks that, you know, that people ruin everything, right? Like, surely we should just be able to say, I'm trying to do the right thing. Here I am. And I want to communicate that to the world, but there's always going to be someone or some segment that goes and abuses that. And then you go, oh God, why do we have to ruin everything? I think there's a huge opportunity for whoever gets that right. And I know there are people trying, and there's a bit of wariness from me. I've spoken to a couple, and then I go back and ask the auditor that I work with, you know, what do you think about these guys? They're trying to do a good thing, but it's lacking a bit here and here and here. They're process wise, it's left a bit wanting. And it's like, well, where do you find that sweet spot in the middle? Because I think it's left wanting because they don't have the resources, because small businesses can't afford that. But yeah, you know, I think most small businesses that I know, if you could just log onto a website and go, my turnover is this, I've got X number of employees, I'm in this industry, tick, 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 you know, go through maybe a 1-hour process, and it goes, here's your estimate, and is, you know, if that estimate assumed a buffer at the upper end, yeah. Then surely we should just be able to do that, and then everyone can at least be trying. You know, rather than being scared of, you know, trying and getting a kick for it, because that happens too, you know.
Absolutely. Now, I'm conscious that we've already gone a little bit over time, so we're going to do some rapid fire questions.
Cool.
So first, what's the best decision that you've made in 99th Monkey?
Oh, that's a really hard question. I think the best decision I ever made was just to not let any setback stop me. So this is the second one. Now there's two. But at some point after a few years in business of going, all right, I'm going to uncap my the limits of my expectations and ambitions for the business. There are no limits anymore. I just want to, you know, make this as big and as good as it can be. And I think that gives you a lot of freedom once you make that decision.
Yeah, wonderful to be able to just keep improving. What would you say is 99th Monkey's unique environmental or social contribution to the world, or as I call it, your sustainability superpower?
I think it just goes back to just the fact that we're trying, you know. I don't think it's actually anything that special. I don't think we can lay claim to anything that special, but we care, you know. Like, I'll say that to the guys in here, the difference between us and our competition a lot of the time is just that we give a shit. Like, we actually care about the product and about what we do and how we do it, and that's different to the way a lot of other people operate, and we're just willing to try. And you know, that was what helped us become the first carbon neutral business in the nut butter category. And I think, as far as I know, we're the only climate positive food business in Australia. I haven't heard of any others. I would like to know if there are others. But you know, it's just caring and trying.
Yeah, so you're gonna put that at the top of your website. We give a shit.
Yeah, we actually give a shit.
You'd be copying Who Gives a Crap at that point. I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's right. I'll have to clear up with them. They seem like nice people.
True. What's your top tip for other small businesses who want to be more sustainable?
Yeah, I think once again, it's just do. Just do what you can. You know, I remember I had a guy come by. He was working in a transport business, and they wanted to go carbon neutral, and all the fear in the business was about not getting it right and getting slammed for not getting it right, which is valid. And as I said, you know, there are people out there who are just taking the piss, and they don't deserve a free pass at all. But don't let that stop you from trying, you know. And that was all I could say to him, because he was like, how did you do it? I was like, well, I just decided I don't care. You know, like, if people want to criticize us, go ahead and point out what we're not, you know, what's not perfect about what we're doing, then fine, I guess. But like, at least we're doing something. And mm-hmm. I think that's what where everyone's got to start.
Yeah, start somewhere. What's next for 99th Monkey? Can you tell us more about your plans?
Yeah, we've got big plans. We've just finished a crowdfunding round, which is really exciting. So we raised $620,000 from almost 300 awesome investors and believers in our brand. And you know, so just so grateful to them for the belief and the support that they're showing to 99th Monkey, and now really determined to pay that back to them. You know, we want to give them a good solid return, as well as you know, achieving what we're setting out to do, which is create, you know, delicious food that's good for your health and good for the planet. And as I said, we think we can do that now in multiple categories. We think that the plant-based movement is so strong that those opportunities are arising right across the supermarket. And we think we're really well placed to do that. What we'll do first is we'll take what we do really well, which make the world's most delicious nut butters, and reformat that into different products for different categories. And so we, you know, the first thing we want to do next year is a plant-based protein powder, you know, so peanut protein powder, and then we want to do ready to drink beverages, so plant-based smoothies with, you know, all with nut butter flavors, and also snacks, so nut butter based snacks. So that's what we're planning for next year, as well as some really exciting innovation with our nut butters as well, to make them much more exciting as well. So we've got a lot on. We're very there's a lot coming up for the next for the next year or two.
I'm so excited to try those new products. But really, how can you get much more exciting than the new hot sauce flavored nut butter?
We that was so much fun. You know, for me, collaborating with other businesses is just so much fun, and such a great way, as I said, like, it's so important to be able to talk to and learn from other businesses, and this is another way to do that and actually create something tangible at the same time. So working with Bunsters on that was really awesome and really exciting, and the response was phenomenal, and so that's still going. And then we've just launched a Christmas spread, which will be available for another week or so. And that's been really fun and really exciting. And we've got some really cool collaborations planned for next year as well. So they're just getting bigger and more fun, actually, and a little bit out of hand. Like, the production team are like, oh, really? Far out. So there's a lot in store for next year. So we're really excited. But I just wanted to touch on, because you started to say, and I very rudely interrupted you, so I'm sorry, but you started to mention our awesome fans, and this, none of this would be possible without them. Like, you know, it's like, how do you go from a crazy idea to farmers markets, to health food stores, to supermarkets. And the reality is that probably the one constant through that has been the support we've got from people. And you know, I wouldn't say, you know, we've never been a kind of a viral success kind of thing, or, you know, no one wants to be a viral anything anymore since COVID, but, you know, but we've never been that kind of, you know, skyrocketing success, but we've always just had enough momentum from the people, you know, the people who believe in the brand and you know, I'm just always blown away by how much people really get what we're trying to do and believe in it and want to support it. And that's been right through from, you know, from the farmers markets and right through to the crowdfunding, where people are, you know, actually really investing their, you know, their hard-earned money in trying to help us achieve that next level of success. And it's just been phenomenal. And that's what's kept us going all the way along.
So good. And so for all of your new fans who might listen to this recording podcast and want to follow you some more and get onto all of your new exciting ventures, where can they learn more, get in touch, or follow 99th Monkey?
Yeah, definitely. We're probably most active on Instagram, 99th_monkey. Beware of fake accounts. They seem to be popping up more and more. So, but yeah, 99th_monkey, you'll find us there. And obviously, and our website, 99thmonkey.com.au. We're always updating with blogs and cool stuff on there as well. And Facebook, 99th Monkey, you'll find us there as well.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much for your time, Nick. I'm so excited to see some of the new products. I'm definitely going to be ordering some of the gingerbread nut butter. Very excited about that. But also thank you for your persistence, your determination, and your willingness to kind of head off into the unknown and keep doing so. So definitely a lot for other small businesses to learn from you. So thank you so much for your time today.
No worries. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.